Well, it is good to be here this morning and to see some faces that I remember from a few years ago. I'm particularly thrilled to see Andy and Johnny at age 18 doing their different things. I remember when we first came to St. Andrew Street, I think, had they just been born? We arrived in the May, I don't know what, that's right. Mark, yes, and I remember being there, and Deborah Nerthen was with you helping at that time, popping in and helping at that. Do go to the John Archer thing next Saturday, by the way. If you haven't heard him or seen him in action and enjoyed his shows, absolutely brilliant. Take your friends along. It's really, really good time. But I'm a little bit worried about what I read on the service order that Stuart gave me. It said, "Did you create the world, Lance Burks?" And my answer to that is, no, I didn't. And the longer answer to that is, although it's a great question, nobody knows. And nobody can be 100% sure in one sense, because who created the world? Well, it's not really open to a scientific demonstration, because you can't go back all those years and create an experiment and say, oh, yes, it happened this way. So you can't observe it and do the measurements like they do in a lab with science, or repeatable experiments, and then propose a theory and then say, you know, I'm even prepared to change my ideas on the basis of what I hear. That's what they do in science, but you can't answer the question, did God create the world, purely from a scientific answer like that. But why does the question arise? Why do people ask, did God create the world, or how did it happen? Well, of course, there have been huge advances in science over recent centuries. And there are some people who are very strong in their view that there is no God. They're militant atheists, as we might say. And they just say, we've explained it all now. There's no need for a God, because we understand exactly how it's all happened from a scientific point of view. And then the media, the television, the radio, and so on, they love to pull things into opposite extremes. So you have those who are laughed at, really, those who believe in creation and the Bible stories, the myths, and those who are, you know, the heroes of our society, the science people who explain it all, and Christians who believe that God created the universe rather look down on us, rather pathetic individuals who are not up to date with all that science has shown. So we're rather primitive in our views, perhaps. And for many, many people, this idea of believing in God, faith, whether it's a Christian faith or not, is irrelevant, because the way we live our lives now, it's all about me. It's all about what I want. It's all about what's happening in the world around my iPhone, my iPlayer, my iPod, and all the rest of it. All about me. And God, well, even other people take second place. And so, is it an important question? Did God create the world? Well, actually, there's another question, because it's not just a sort of an academic issue. It's not just what the boffins or the people on the TV talk about. Because there's another question, really, another great question, because it does affect us. If there is a God who created the universe, then actually that puts me in a situation where I have to decide how I relate to that God. If I believe that there is no God, then I live my life in a completely different way. So there's a question that arises in the psalm that was written 3,000 years ago by King David, perhaps. And it's a question that comes up in the middle of this Psalm 8. What is man? What is man that you are mindful of him? What is the son of man that you care for him? And the psalmist is asking, as he looks at the wonder of all the world around him, and the bigness and the vastness of it. Here's little old me. Where do I fit in? So if you've got your Bible, you can read it, but I'm going to put it on a video, hopefully, and the sound should come through as well. What is man, based on Psalm 8?
O Lord, our Lord, how majestic is your name in all of the earth. You let your glory be seen in the heavens above. Out of the mouths of babes and infants, you have established a fortress of strength to still the enemy and quiet the avenger. When I look at your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars which you have set into place, what is man that you are mindful of him? The son of man that you care for him? You made him a little lower than the angels and crowned him with glory and honor. You have given him dominion over the works of your hands. You have put all things under his feet, all sheep and oxen, and also the beasts of the field, the birds of heaven, the fish of the sea, and whatever passes along the paths of the seas. O Lord, our Lord, how majestic is your name in all of the earth.
So the question, did God create the world? Ask another question, really. What about us? Who am I? And really, looking behind the question, did God create the world? Yes, we ask the question, well, what is man? What is human? What is a man or a woman? You see, science can create, can describe us from all sorts of different perspectives, from brain activity, the genetic makeup of our bodies, the physiological profile, physical characteristics, you know, beautiful, handsome, and all the rest of it. Don't look at me, by the way. Our chemical composition, and the relationships we have. You can describe a human being in all those sort of terms, but science can't offer us an answer to the question, well, what's the purpose? Why are we here? Why do I love? Why do sometimes I'm prepared to sacrifice myself, to be altruistic towards people? Where do I get my understanding of what's right and wrong from? Is it just in my genes? I don't mean my denims, I mean, you know, in my genetic makeup. Well, those are the sort of the questions. Science and faith ask different questions in a way, about the same big question. Science asks the question, how? It describes how things work. It wants to find out, and I came from a science background. I think it's thrilling to keep asking more and more questions about how does the world work? How does my body work? How do I relate to all the things in the universe? And there's the wonder of the universe. But religion, faith, a belief in God asks the question a different way. Why? What's the meaning of my life? What's the meaning of the universe that we live in? But of course, science and faith aren't incompatible. I'm a Christian. I come from a science background. There are other people who are involved in the science world, many of them in Cambridge. I believe in a God who embraces all of that. I believe in a God who made the universe and can give us an understanding through our investigation in the science world of how the universe ticks. But he also gives my life meaning, gives your life meaning to the question, why am I here in this wonderfully great universe? There's a question that goes on in the back, though, as to how people answer that question, did God create the world? What's my life? You see, we all have a set of ideas within us that frame the way we answer that question. People call it a worldview. We have ideas that we presuppose how things work. Some people say our universe, as far as we understand it, it's like a closed universe. There's no God. It's everything that we know is in this universe. There's nothing else. But others will say, no, we live in an open universe. Because God created the universe, and God can come into our world, and God can act on our world. And if you believe in a closed universe, you have said right at the beginning of your answer to the question, there is no God. But if you live in a world view that says, God, it may be there, God is out there, and God can touch my life, that radically changes the way you answer that question, did God make the world? And obviously, a whole range of people in the science world and the faith world will have different views on how the world came into being. At the extreme left, you've got those who are militant atheists, like Richard Dawkins and people like that. You have more humble atheists who say, I don't believe in a God, but I'm willing to talk with people, I'm willing to explore and even change my mind if evidence comes up. We have those in the middle, the agnostics, who say, I just honestly don't know. I don't know whether there is or there isn't. There are those who are believers in God, not necessarily Christians, but theists, as we call them, who believe in the scientific understanding of evolution and think that God set the evolutionary process in motion. There are those who believe in creation outside of an evolutionary view, but they fully embrace scientific understandings. And then there are the what I call the literal creationists, who believe that God created the world in 7 24-hour days, according to a literal understanding of Genesis chapter 1. Well, maybe that's helpful or not. But you see, right at the extremes of the scientific world, you've got somebody like Richard Dawkins. He wrote that book, The God Delusion, which was a bestseller some years ago. He's a professor in Oxford University, not Cambridge, of course. You know, Oxford is down there somewhere. John Lennox, who's a professor of mathematics and philosophy at Oxford University, poles apart. They debate and they discuss things openly and disagree violently. He wrote the book God's Undertake, which is a brilliant book. It's not easy to read, but it's a brilliant book. And he basically said, no, science hasn't buried God. He's a very firm Christian believer. And there have been many, many scientists over the years and over the centuries who've been firm believers in God, but have been right at the forefront of scientific understanding. And they say, yeah, we believe in a God who's created this universe. And we're finding out these things, for instance, in astronomy and cosmology. Those sort of people, Copernicus, Galileo, Kepler, and more modern times, Wilkinson, Scott, he's at Cambridge University, or was, and Penzias. They looked at this background radiation from the very beginning of the universe, they think, so on. And in maths and physics, you can see those names. I'm not going to go through them all. And right here in Cambridge, or just on the outskirts of Cambridge, the Human Genome Project with Francis Collins, who again is a believer in God as creator. Well, I want you to feel free now to go to sleep for a few minutes. All I ask is that you don't snore, because that really would put me off, because I just want to give you a very brief understanding, in my understanding, of some of the things that are going on. When we ask the question, what was going on at the start of the universe? If God made the universe, or if he didn't, what was going on right at the beginning there? Well, sorry, I'll just put that in there. Christians aren't, in science, are not ostriches looking up their backsides. So way back in the 16th and 17th century, you'd got Christians and you'd got people who believed in God, if they weren't actually Christians themselves. And to start with, they thought everything revolved around planet Earth. So the sun went round the Earth through a literal reading of the Old Testament, like Psalm 19. The sun rises at one end of the heavens and makes its circuit to the other. Nothing is hidden from its heat. And the idea was everything revolved around planet Earth. Then along come people like Copernicus and Galileo, and they say, oh, no, no, that's not right. Actually, our measurements say everything revolves around the sun, as far as we're concerned, in our galaxy. And Kepler and others worked that through. And in our more modern years, in the last sort of 60, 70 years, there have been various views about how the universe started. In the middle of the last century, people like Fred Hoyle were talking about the steady state model, that there's a consistent density of stars and galaxies in the universe, and as the universe expands, then more matter comes into being and fills that up. But more recently, and the one that is most usually talked about now, is the Big Bang. That's not when somebody bangs a drum, but this is what happened at the beginning of time, as people understand that. But they're saying even now, we can't work out why there isn't enough matter that we can see to work out why everything is as it is. There must be some dark matter that we can't see. They're even talking about multiple universes. In fact, millions of universes, some people say. Can't understand it myself. Well, okay. The start of the universe according to the Big Bang. Were you there? I can't prove it. You can't prove it or disprove it. There it goes. An infinitesimally small lump of matter expanded to of infinitely great mass exploded 13.7 billion years ago. That's just a little bit more than yesterday. From nothing to 1 meter in 10 to the minus 35th of a second. And I can't measure that on my watch either. That's basically what science understands at the moment, according to the creation of the universe 13.7 billion years ago. And basically, it wasn't the creation of matter in an existing space, it was the creation of space itself. From a Christian understanding, it came from nothing, ex nihilo. But it begs the question, really, where did all that initial energy, where did it come from in the first place? Well, what do Christians say? What does the Bible say? Even though many, many people will say rubbish to it, we'd say, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Those first words in the Bible as we have it. But of course, many will laugh at that. So what about the origins of life on earth? If the universe began all those billions of years ago, if it did, that's the best theory that people come up with at the moment, what about life here on earth? Well, scientists say 4.5 billion years ago, our Earth came into being in what we call the solar system. We won't go into all the reasons why they believe the dating is that, although a lot of assumptions made that the measurements they're taking now have been constant all the years back that they believe from the beginning there. And if you think, if you ask people what has happened to create life on Earth as we know it now, then basically if you put it into a 1 year cycle, then right up there on the right top right hand side, just in those last few seconds of that year, of the 4.5 billion years, is when human beings came on the Earth and we know it. Now whether it's like that or not, that's what some people would say to us. And they were saying, well, life has evolved on our planet. Charles Darwin, back in 1859, wrote that famous book, The Origin of Species, and so on. Basically, he was saying that things have developed, life has come on Earth through descent with modification. One being has been modified as it's led to another being, and so on, another life form. And he was looking at, particularly when he went to the Galapagos Islands in the Pacific Ocean, he observed certain things where he saw changes according to the climate and the conditions. These birds, these finches, they had different beaks, and he said they were adapted from an original form to fit into the food that was available in the various places on these islands. So there was adaptation. I don't have any particular problem with that. That's what's called microevolution within a particular species. So these these finches evolved according to their circumstances in small ways. But then there's a much bigger development of that into what we might call macro, big scale evolution. Am I losing you? Wake up. Okay. Where they would say there'd be one species, a new life kind form, that's been developed from another one. So we have, you know, sort of birds and fishes, and they become mammals, and then the mammals eventually have become humanoid and like us human beings. Over a lot of many more small changes and selections of the things that are most viable to form new life forms, new species. And if you, I'm not asking you to look at that chart in detail, but basically they say over all these 4.5 million years of life on Earth, you started from a sort of a soup of chemicals that have been hit upon with ultraviolet light and electricity and all the rest of it. And slowly the building blocks of genetic material, the DNA and all the rest of it, is formed. Then you get the primitive life forms, and eventually you come up to the humanoids and human beings themselves. Now, I'm not a scientist in this sort of stuff, but this is what is generally thought by non-Christian and some Christian scientists over these years, how life has evolved on Earth. And so when it comes to how humans have evolved, well, we've come up from our little friends, the monkeys. And looking around this morning, there is quite some evidence of that, I'm sure. I'm not looking at anybody in particular, Andy. It's all right. Somebody's put a sort of slightly more humorous twist on that one, that we've gone from a stooping form to stooping over the computer as part of our involvement. And then right here in Cambridge back in 1953, Crick and Watson, building on the work of others way, way back, they understood the structure of DNA. And if you've seen on television Professor Brian Cox trailing a new series of scientific developments in the in Britain, you'll see that he goes to the Eagle Pub in Cambridge and said, this is where Crick and Watson met. And reportedly they said, we found the secret of life, because they discovered the structure of DNA and the genetic material of which we are made. And interestingly, we share the same genetic material, 99%, as mice. But actually, that doesn't worry me at all. It just says we have a creator God who designed the life forms, and very economically, the same structure of life form is within all of created order. It's just that he made a very special step up for us as human beings. Okay, where are we going with this now? Then, of course, we get other people who will build on the idea of evolution to say not only has evolution created us, like we are today, from very primitive beings, but also we have evolved in the way that we are as human beings. And so we're developing as moral beings. We're developing as social beings and ethical development. And there's a thought, you know, will the superhuman person species evolve? Just in the papers this week, David Attenborough, the great naturalist who does so many programs on the television, said humans have halted their evolution. He believes now, because human beings are able to reproduce with such efficiency, you know, in terms of the life expectancy of babies being born and so on, that we no longer need to adapt to hostile circumstances. So we've finished our evolutionary process. And immediately after that, you'll get scientists writing in the paper saying, rubbish, we're still evolving. But you see, if you believe that there is no God and we're just evolving accidentally, as it were, then that has been abused in so many ways. We're just accidents. And so in Nazi Germany, they believe, because in some ways we were just the Aryan race had become the top dog race, they could do what they wanted with other lesser developed human forms. Might is right, and so on. And human responsibility. Well, it's not my fault. It's not my fault that I have murderous tendencies. It's not my fault that I thieve. It's not my fault that I hate people. It's all in my genes. That's the way I'm made up. So, let's just get rid of some of this stuff. All I wanted to say really is that there's actually a lot of objections, not to microevolution, but to macroevolution. Because the theory is that, you know, one life form has evolved into another life form. When you look carefully at the fossil record, and when you look down the history, nobody has found those transitional steps between various life forms. And although there are supposed to be these various precursors to human beings, no one can say that those more ape-like human beings are actually the ones that we have evolved from. And in fact, there are many, many scientists who say, really, the chances of evolution happening are so incredibly close to zero, but because people don't want to believe in God, they believe in anything almost, however unlikely it is. They say, actually, I used to be an evolutionary scientist, but I've come to that place now, an increasing number in America and in this country who are saying, actually, I cannot accept it all happened by chance. It doesn't stack up. The new, the range of Dacia cars from Romania, the adverts on television, the strapline is, do the maths. And do the maths about the chances of human life evolving are incredibly near to zero, according to the mathematics that people would want to put out. Anyway, it's not that evolution doesn't explain anything about the universe, but it doesn't explain everything, is what we want to say. The fact that we may understand how a car works and the way that the internal combustion engine has evolved over time doesn't mean to say there wasn't a designer and a developer. So the fact that we understand perhaps how the universe came into being doesn't mean to say that there wasn't a designer. And so this is what we're going on to look at now. What is man? Why am I here? Am I just the accidental product of a cosmic nuclear explosion going back 13.7 billion years ago and random processes on planet Earth 4.5 billion years since? Or am I the purposeful creation of our all-powerful, loving God? That's the basic question. Did God create the universe or not? Shall I finish there or do you want a bit more? Would you just like to kiss my hand? I've never heard anybody say that before. Why do I believe in God as creator? I'm not rubbishing science, by the way, but why do I believe in God as the creator of the universe? First of all, because of what I see and understand in the observable universe. It seems to fit in with what the scientific understanding is of the Earth starting Big Bang all those years ago from nothing. That's what it says in the Bible. In the beginning, God created from nothing, if I can put it that way. An incredible order and design in the universe. Everything, the anthropic principle, don't go into that, other than to say everything is set up just physically with all those constants just so that life is possible for man on this earth, for men and women on this earth. Just changing one or two of the constants of the universe just a little bit, and we would not be here. Everything seems to have been ordered so that we can exist on planet Earth. There seems to be, as some people would say, an intelligence. And these aren't necessarily Christians. There's what's called intelligent design. But a lot of scientists are now saying, I cannot accept that it's just random. There seems to be something that's brought the information into this world to make it designed and working as it is. They're not necessarily going to say there's a God, but they're saying there's something of intelligent and the laws of nature that science can understand and explore. It's just so incredibly, wonderfully ordered. Well, and we have minds that can understand all this. Johannes Kepler, one of the great astronomers in the 16th, 17th century, he said, I'm thinking God's thoughts after him. Francis Bacon in the 16th, 17th century said, God has two books, nature and the Bible. If you look at Psalm 19, you can see what he means. The heavens declare the glory of God. The skies proclaim the work of his hands. And a bit later on, it says, the law of the Lord is perfect, reviving the soul. The statutes of the law are trustworthy. So we can know God through looking at the universe and appreciate him and bring him glory, but we can also understand something of his ways and what he wants for us from the Bible. So we're going running out of time. Stuart, I'm sorry. Can I just go on a bit further? Or am I boring the socks off you? Because your feet will smell if I do. Today's scientific explanations would have been absolutely incomprehensible 3,500 years ago or so, when Genesis was put down and written. But the Old Testament, I believe, and this is me speaking now, I believe accommodates to the language and ideas of the ancient cosmologists. That's the idea of how things came into being in the universe. You see, if you go back to Bible language, you have this sort of picture that you can see behind me. The foundations of the earth going into this sort of ocean abyss and chaos underneath. And you have the firmament below and the firmament above and so on. And the windows in the firmament let the rain into the earth and the heavenly bodies under the firmament there. And that's the way that people thought 3,500 years ago. Now, the Bible uses the language and the forms of that. You set the earth on its foundations and so on, and the firmament of the heavens and all those sort of things. And that's how they think. But you see, the absolutely unique and incredible thing about the Bible and the faith of Israel is that they believe there was one God behind that who created all this. All the other religions around and the understandings around was there was a sort of many gods and battles between these gods that eventually came into creation as we know it. And the 6 days of creation that are mentioned in Genesis 1 just into chapter 2, I believe these are divine interventions, particular stages when God acted, and then there were vast periods of time, and then he acted again in a miraculous way, and then again, and so on. And the biblical record here says that human beings, you and me and the rest of the world around us, are the pinnacle of God's creation as far as we look at from Earth. Whether there's life on other planets, I do not know. I'm sorry, other galaxies, I do not know. But as far as we are concerned, in our relationship or not with God, God sees us as the pinnacle of his creation here. And everything was good. In a very rough way, if you think about it sort of creatively, the order that is in Genesis 1 isn't miles away from what science understands today anyway, although it is not a scientific explanation. So the Bible has a very clear theology of creation, unique from any other religious understanding of its day, that God is over and above his creation and yet purposely acts on it. Psalm 8. O Lord, our Lord, how majestic is your name in all the earth. You've set your glory above the heavens. Going on to verse 3. When I consider your heavens and the work of your fingers. Now, God hasn't got fingers. You know, we're using human terms. The moon and the stars which you've set in place and so on. Psalm 19:1 again. The heavens declare the glory of God. The skies proclaim the work of his hands. And all of Psalm 104. And when we come to the New Testament, what we read is that God, who created the universe, has decisively intervened in this world in the sending of his Son, Jesus Christ, who is the co-creator of the universe. The beginning of John's Gospel says this: in the beginning was the Word, and that is a term used for Jesus, the rational understanding of the world. Beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. Through him all things were made. Without him nothing was made that has been made. Paul, writing to a church in Turkey today, Colossae, says, Jesus is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation, for by him all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible. Whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities, all things were created by him, for him. He is before all things, and in him all things hold together. The New Testament is quite clear that the creation as we see it is the purposeful creation of a loving God who has revealed himself to us on planet Earth in the person of his eternal Son, Jesus Christ. And when we look at the person of Jesus, we see a miraculous birth, fulfilling many prophecies in the Old Testament that he personally could not have put into place. His ministry, his teachings and his miracles. His teaching that's never been bettered. Miracles that are astounding. And his death on the cross. And the record in the New Testament that he didn't stay dead, but on the third day he came out of the tomb and was raised back to life again. He's alive today. We've been worshipping him as Jesus is Lord. Now, I would say this. If God intervened on earth in Jesus, is it not possible to believe that he also created the world? You see, if you're going to say there is no God and he did not create the universe, you're going to have to first debunk everything about Jesus and his death and resurrection. Because what we're saying is that this same God who created the universe through Jesus has come into this world and can be known in the person of Jesus. I studied chemistry at Manchester all those years ago. 1968, we were the first group of students who went into the research block in UMIST at Manchester there. That arrow points to a window in the staircase, just coming down from F floor where my lab was, and coming down to the staircase to the road. It was May time, beautiful blue sky like that. And here was I, as a committed Christian, I was the leader of the Christian Union in Manchester University, and had a very clear and robust faith, I thought. And I was coming down, I looked out of the window, and suddenly everything went... No, it didn't actually quite go like that. But I thought, the vastness of the universe as I looked out into the blue sky, can there be a God behind all that? I had this huge moment of doubt. It lasted about 2 seconds. And then what came into my mind was, but there's Jesus. Jesus lived on this earth. Jesus came and lived and performed his miracles, did his teaching. He died. It's historically recorded, not just in the Bible, but outside of the Bible as well. And the evidence is that he rose back to life. He's alive and can be known. And said, yes, there is a God. Not because I understand all about the origins of the universe, but because he has come to us and shown himself to us in Jesus Christ. And so the universe displays God's glory, says Paul in Romans chapter 1, verse 20. Since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that we are without excuse. If we are prepared to say we live in an open universe, then we can see the wonder of God in his creation. And this psalm says there is a reason that comes to us from understanding that God is the creator. What is man that you are mindful of him? The Son of Man, that you care for him. Because I've been made, I've been created by a loving God. He cares for me. I'm loved and I'm forgiven through Jesus by this God who created the universe. But he loves me. He loves you. He cares for me. He has revealed himself to us. We can have relationship with him. We can have responsibility before him as well. And for the world that he's given us dominion over. And that hope for the future. This world is not out of control. It is not randomly going on. We believe, as we sang, or as we sang at the beginning, that Jesus is Lord. And that he is in control. And one day he's coming back. And the very last slide, if it was on, and it isn't, is basically saying, I challenge you this morning. If you, at the moment, you do not have a faith in God through Jesus to know him personally, and if you've got questions about, well, did God create everything? I challenge you this morning to do an experiment. If God is there, if this creator God is there, I believe he's knowable. And if you will say to him in your heart this morning, I'm not sure how the universe came into being, but if you're there, God, will you show yourself to me? I'm prepared to turn from what I know is wrong in my life. I'm prepared to trust in what Jesus Christ has done for me when he died on that cross. People talk about him dying there to forgive my sin. I don't understand it all, but will you show yourself to me in some way that I can understand? Now, if God created the universe, and if God revealed himself through Jesus, and if there are people in this room and millions of people through the universe today who said, I know God personally through Jesus, the challenge is just for us. Do we live in a closed universe, no God? Or a universe in my world where God has made us and wants to break in and have relationship with us? Sorry, it's a very long answer to the question. I'm sorry it's gone on so long. And it's thrown your order of service out, I'm sure, Stuart. But I do apologize in one sense for going on so long. But I hope it's been useful.